Hey everyone, this is Nathan, just doing a quick introduction for today's rebroadcast series. Today we're talking about the student experience. This came out on June 10th, 2020. It included students and alumni, Maraf, Janelle, Richard, Heather, and Tracy. I think you're going to love this one, especially for those prospective students out there considering Saybrook, as well as for all of you alumni and community members who are interested in the power of a Saybrook educational experience and how we contribute to the health and well-being of the communities we serve. So without further ado, here is the student experience at Saybrook University. Hello, fellow podcast travelers. Welcome to Saybrook Insights, a production of Saybrook University, an online, nonprofit, private, regionally accredited university headquartered in Pasadena, California. Celebrating 50 years this year, our humanistic approach to online education has resulted in thousands of alumni the world over advancing the health and well-being of the communities we serve. My name is Nathan Long, University President and host of this podcast. Today's episode is part of a new feature entitled The Saybrook Experience, in which I connect with students, faculty, staff, and alumni about what it's like to be part of our unique, powerful institution. In this episode, I met several students and alumni from around the country, each of whom brought unique insights from their time at Saybrook. I think you'll find each of their stories extremely inspiring, highlighting the power of a Saybrook educational experience. To learn more about Saybrook University, visit us online at www.saybrook.edu. And now, the Saybrook Experience. It is my pleasure to introduce on Saybrook Insights several wonderful students and alumni who have chosen to join me today in talking about their Saybrook experience. And we're going to have each individual kick us off with an introduction. And I would like to have Maraf start us off with a little bit about yourself, how long you were at Saybrook, what you studied, and anything else of interest you'd like to give the audience.
Sure. Thank you for the introduction. So my name is Maraf. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of California. I currently reside in Los Angeles, born and raised in Washington, D.C. I am a third-year PhD student in the Mindful Leadership and Healthcare Specialization. And I came to Saybrook because I have my MPH as well as my MFT, and I was looking for a way to bridge both of those master's degrees. And I thought that the Mindful Leadership Program was just an excellent way for me to bridge those two master's programs. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. That's great. Heather.
Hi, I'm Heather Pate, and I'm a registered dietitian. I am both a student and an alumni. I got my master's. I started in 2017, got my master's in integrative and functional medicine, and now I am in the proposal phase of my dissertation and for my PhD in integrative and functional medicine.
Very good. Very good. Welcome. Thank you. And Richard.
Hi, everybody. I'm Richard Olberger, clinical and performance psychologist based out of Los Angeles, and I attended Saybrook. I started the week before 9/11, so very interesting cohort to experience this entire community, and one of my first years attended 3 weeks after the birth of my son. So Saybrook has been a key part of my life and development, as well as what's gone on in the greater world and how I process those experiences. I attended Saybrook at that time, was very interested in spirituality in the world across disciplines, cultures, faiths, how people used it to improve the quality of their relationships and in times of well-being and in times of, of challenged health. And so Saybrook allowed me to apply research, embed myself in communities of spiritual practice, and combine clinical practice, consciousness studies, and spirituality. So I'm thankful for all of that.
Great. Good to have you here. Thank you for
that. Thank you.
And Tracy Sisk, if you don't mind, we'd like to have you go next.
So thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I am an eighth year student in the clinical psychology PhD program, and I started in Saybrook in 2013, so I've been along on this journey with you and all of us, and it's really been a pleasure to be at Saybrook, where I have continued to learn to be a conscious human being and continuing my process of personal development and taking that passion of personal growth and transformation into my clinical work. I am in licensure transition right now, and so I am actually just beginning to work with one of our alumni, Dr. Monica Mancia, and her work in the Relational Path Institute, and working with empowering people to find the authentic love relationships that they want in life. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And last but certainly not least, Ms. Janelle Means.
Hi. It's so good to be here. I'm Janelle Means. I am from Nashville, Tennessee. And I have been in the Saybrook program, PhD Creativity Studies program, since 2017, fall of 2017. And so I'll be coming up on my fourth year. And I decided on that program because of my love for creativity. And of course, my background is in music. So I sing, I do a lot of work with different bands. And I am definitely passionate about specifically soul music. And so my dissertation will be revolved around that topic and how people respond to it and how it can bring healing to people. And so that's something that I'm very looking forward to diving in more and hoping that the dissertation will be something exciting for me to experience. And I've been definitely enjoying my experience at Saybrook. So yeah, glad to be here.
Very good. So we have representation from around the country, from the great Southeast to the Middle South to the West Coast. It's pretty powerful collective we have here. So welcome. And Janelle, thank you. That was a terrific introduction. I remember hearing your singing or the video that you showed of you singing at the...
Yeah, we still do those.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So Janelle, maybe you could kick us off actually with the first question I have for the group. You alluded to this a little bit already. What brought you to Saybrook? How did you find it? And in your view, what makes Saybrook special, say, from maybe other options that you had in front of you at the time?
Okay. I was actually, I was at Argosy University. That's where I was working. And that's also where I received my master's in professional counseling from. But at the time, I had already graduated. And but I was still working there. And I was actually teaching courses there, too. But I wanted to go further with my education. And at first, I thought that I would pursue a degree at Argosy. And they had a couple of different programs there that were of interest to me. But they still kind of were limited in where I wanted to go. And so I did a lot of research and started Googling things and then came across Saybrook. And so I looked at the different programs. And the first thing that I noticed about Saybrook was that how unique the programs were from anything else I'd seen anywhere else. And so I started looking at the different programs and reading about them, and definitely creativity studies is what stuck out to me. And I was just like, that's unique. And then reading about that, the fact that everyone can be creative, because it's not just about people that are in the arts, because I think the first thing that people think about when they think of the word creative are people that are in the performing arts, visual arts, things like of that nature. But it's really about people finding their own creativity. And I want to be able to be a part of that and bringing creative ideas and creative events and themes to different things, such as musical events, workshops, different courses that can be created that they can help people through their life in different ways. And so I want to be able to bring different elements such as counseling to that, coaching, just for it to be an exciting time. So hopefully I'll be able to do that in the future.
Fantastic. Thank you for that share. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Tracy, how about yourself? You found your way here, what, almost 10 years ago? Not quite 10, but almost.
Yeah, don't age me too fast.
No, please.
That's okay. Yeah, so I found Saybrook right when I was finishing up a master's degree at Seattle University in organization systems renewal, which is organization and leadership development. And a big part of that process was discovering our vocation. And through that discernment process, it really became very clear to me that I wanted to help people in, you know, in some way. And learning in that program how to use myself as an instrument of positive change was really a big platform for me with Saybrook because of the humanistic paradigm, and that's really the way that Saybrook portrays itself, and the way that it kind of drew me to it was continuing that process of personal development and transformation so that I can then go out into the world and be an agent for positive change, no matter where that is, whether it's with individuals in a clinical situation, within a clinical organization itself, or even in our broader, like, us, you know, our times right now with so much unrest in our broad society. So Saybrook really just met me right in that sweet spot.
Right where you were at the right time. And here you are.
Yep. Definitely.
9 months from graduation. We're going to keep
our,
yeah. You're now on recording, right?
Oh no. All right. Make it so.
That's great. I'm glad you also brought up the concept of humanistic. One of the things we'll have a little bit of a group chat about, hopefully, is what that means to you and what you've learned about humanistic psychology, but also humanistic principles as they apply to the work that you're doing in each of your fields. So glad you brought that up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard, you want to kick us off next with what brought you to Saybrook and what makes Saybrook special? I know you alluded to that earlier, but maybe a little bit more on that front would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a highly individual place of like where each person is at in their graduate school choices and ideas that I had. So a lot of false ideas about like it was a race to complete graduate school and it had to be done brick and mortar. And there was kind of a personal conflict at the age I was at in my mid-20s around who would I serve. And, you know, my family's from Vienna, Austria. It would seem, you know, like only fitting to go for a psychodynamic program. And I got my master's in that at Delphi University in New York. But there was this deeper quench. I spent my junior year abroad living in the Middle East about understanding conflict, people of different religions. I mean, anyone who's been to Jerusalem has seen, you know, the Greek Orthodox and Muslim and Jewish people, and such a small space of so much sacredness and so much power and yet so much conflict. So I think I was kind of had this unfinished search for what was this deeper meaning behind people, and always had this part of me that was always looking for what were the commonalities amongst faiths. So I went for one semester brick and mortar, and I was spending more time in my places of spiritual practice where I spent $250 a semester, where I was spending, you know, almost 15 grand to go to a professional school on psychology. And yet when the conversations came up around diversity, around religious experience, there was a fear around what would come up. Would there be conflict? Would someone be offended? So I remember almost having what I would describe as like a panic attack outside my graduate school and taking a semester off and really going on a deeper kind of existential quest of maybe I'm meant to be a spiritual teacher. Maybe I'm not meant to be in psychology. And somebody mentioned to me, you should look into spiritual psychology. And the light bulb went off. And I said, there's such a thing, and there's a graduate program out there. And Saybrook, I mean, you know, really, from the top of the charts, from every conversation I had, from, Bill Bruff at the time, was my contact. Every conversation, I experienced that spirituality and that seeking to the faculty, the levels of experience, across the board, to the way I was encouraged from the beginning. There were no limits on, or on what kind of research I could do or what I could talk about. So I felt free to explore and endeavor, and felt encouraged and challenged by each of the, you know, the faculty are not cookie cutter by any means. And in a lot of ways they were rebels. One of the professors, beloved, Eugene Taylor, who passed, was a Harvard alumni, but he was probably an outcast at Harvard. So, I mean, it was just really unique people, and I was inspired by that. And when I was welcomed to the first RC, I was welcomed with, you know, somebody making sure I had an appropriate place to practice my spiritual practice that first RC. So the connection between who I was personally and what I was seeking academically and in the community really resonated with Saybrook from the beginning.
That's beautiful. Thank you, sir. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Heather, how about yourself?
And it seems like a previous life. I worked for a online telephone weight loss program. Hmm. And over time, it just became clear that this cookie cutter weight loss programs that are out there, just they don't work. And I started looking around for something that was more in lines with my own thoughts, you know, busting out of the diet culture. And I started looking at this thing called integrative and functional nutrition, which was pretty new at the time. And there weren't a lot of programs out there, and I knew I wanted to get my PhD. So I had to find something that was accredited. And at the time, there were only two accredited programs. And one of them, when I interviewed with them, they're like, well, we're not sure if we're going to be around in a year. But they still wasn't quite as good a fit as Saybrook, which is looking at that individuality, that personalized care. And when I had my interview, it clinched it, because it's not only just about the care, but here's the evidence to back it up. And I'm a show me the science type of gal. Mm-hmm. So it really, just the whole person aspect. And once I came in and went to the RC and got a personal text message from this guy named Nathan Long,
oh,
like my first day, it just kind of clinched it that this is kind of where I need to be.
All right. That's great. You remembered the text. That warms my heart. All right. Yeah, I really appreciate you. I appreciate everyone's stories thus far. And one of the things that I think has been an interesting evolution for our university, just by having this diversity of programming all grounded in the humanistic principles that we have, is this, I think sometimes people think humanistic means squishy or not hard science or not focused in evidence, right? Whereas what you're saying, and I know Richard and Tracy and Janelle, and I'm sure Maraf, as we get into your story, there's science behind it. There's work that's being done. There's evidence that's there to support the work that you all are engaged in. And I think that's one of the powers of a humanistic experience, right? But we're looking at it in the totality of the human experience, right? It's not detached from one thing. It's looking at the whole individual, the whole collective, the system. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I think that tees us up here in just a few minutes for what is humanistic in just a few. So thank you, Heather. Maraf?
Yes. So I actually have a dual master's degree. I have a master's in public health with an emphasis in health promotion and education. And then I have my master's in marital and family therapy. And I knew I wanted to get a doctorate. I just didn't know in what. And I thought to myself, I don't want to waste all those years and do a dissertation on something that I'm only half interested in. I wanted to be something that I could actually utilize and, you know, something that was meaningful to me that I was going to spend so much time researching. And I just couldn't figure it out. So I graduated from those programs in 2010. So this whole time I've just been like, ah, la, 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 randomly researching things. I looked into PsyD programs and I realized I really didn't want to do a PsyD since it seemed repetitive of my MFT program. And then I looked into maybe getting a DRPH, a doctorate in public health, and it just didn't resonate with me. And so just one day I was just randomly searching PhD programs, and that's literally how I stumbled upon Saybrook. Never heard of Saybrook. No one referred me to Saybrook. I just happened to randomly stumble upon it on the internet, and I'm like, oh, what is this school? And I read the Mindful Leadership in Healthcare, and I thought, wow, that's just exactly what I'm looking for, because I was looking for a way to still educate and promote health, and I have mental health, so why not promote mental health? I just didn't know how to do it, and I was fortunate enough to have Luann Fortune, who's my advisor and the chair for the department, and I'm talking to her. Between her and another faculty, Dorianne, I'm like, oh my God, I actually think I know how I want to integrate these two. But I think it was just, you know, faith, if we want to call it, how I just stumbled upon the school and the degree, because I literally, like I said, since 2010, have been always looking to go into higher ed to get a doctorate, but it needed to be something that resonated with me and something that was meaningful to me. So
absolutely,
Saybrook came along.
What do they say? Or some students have said, Saybrook found me, you know, it's that kind of deal. We found you on the interwebs, Madoff. So
yes, you did.
So maybe we could have you continue on with us and tell us just a little bit about, you know, the online learning experience that you've had so far. Each of you have talked beautifully about how you found Saybrook, kind of why you chose it. Now about your experience, what is it about it? And I put that in the context of COVID-19. As many of us are all aware, there's a value placed on online learning versus face-to-face, that one is better than the other. And we're not here to debate, you know, the larger question of what is better than the other. Rather, you know, each of us brings and has a desire for a certain type of learning experience. And I know each of you have certain experiences that you valued that have made this meaningful for you. So maybe, Maraf, if you could talk a bit about what the online experience is like for you, maybe what it's all about in your program, even just to give folks a sense of what it's all about.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. It was really hard when I first started because I hadn't been in school in so long, for one. So, and I started Saybrook in August 2018. So I graduated June 2010. So that was 8 years. And I was so used to just working full time and coming home and actually relaxing. And so trying to get myself into a rhythm was really difficult. But I found that every single professor that I had at Saybrook has been so supportive. They literally tell you if there's something going on in your life, if you need extra time, if you need anything, like, let us know. You just need to communicate. And I think that was interesting for me to hear, because even though I'm a therapist and I tell other people how they should do things and how they should advocate for themselves, I sometimes don't take that advice. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself having a hard time to advocate for myself and say, hey, I needed a little bit more time. But I learned my lesson after the first semester. So I think it's about pacing yourself, coming up with a schedule, making sure to include self-care. In my particular program, was about mindful leadership. So what I realized is that you get from your program what you put in. So they're assigning you these assignments for a reason. It's not just busy work. They're saying, like, hey, these assignments are intended to help you learn X thing. And by communicating with other classmates in the discussion posts, you learn so much. It's literally just like having a dialogue in person. It's just that it's via written text over the computer. And I think some people have a hard time with that transition. But if you look at it from that perspective of, oh, this is the way I would communicate in person, and I'm trying to understand somebody else's perspective, which I might not have considered, you get to learn so much from just one assignment. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing is you get what you put in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. Great point. Thank you. That was a rousing endorsement. I appreciate that you'd acknowledge that it wasn't easy at first. I think it's just like any experience, right? You got to acclimate and get used to it, and it does take time. Just to follow up, it sounds like you're also saying that grad school isn't a walk in the park, right?
No, it's not a walk in the park. No, it's not. But I mean, we're, at least for me, I'm at a PhD level, so I don't expect it to be easy. I would be, there'll be a big question mark if it was easy, right? Yeah. At least for me, I would think, it should be a little bit more difficult than my master's program or more intense in some way. So.
Very good. Very good. Hey, Heather, how about yourself? How has your experience been?
Well, I came from a unique background. The job I had was work from home. So I've actually been working from home since about 2010. And so the online learning part really wasn't as difficult. I knew some tips and tricks to help keep network. For instance, starting up the Facebook group for my department and setting up study groups and inviting the class to study groups. Those sort of things to increase connection really helped. What I ran into, which made the first semester again difficult, was online is not brick and mortar. It's a completely different beast. And so successful study patterns that you had in brick and mortar, for me, they didn't work. I actually had to rediscover my own flow for how to study and how to get things done on time. And, you know, what tools did I need that I didn't use for the brick and mortar? So that was the challenge. And once I found that flow, things smoothed out and everything went great. But it was, as Maraf said, a lot of work.
Took some time to figure that out. What are some tips and tricks you might throw out to the collective community here around how you found your flow?
I use Office Outlook. I use tasks, and I would take all of the assignments. Before the term even started, I'd take all the assignments and put it in my task lists with the due dates. And for papers, I'd actually subtask it so I could start earlier and like 2 weeks before start looking at papers, a week before start writing it. And so I'd do subtasks. Do not dictate or do directly into Canvas. Don't dictate from your phone. There will be errors. I always do it in Word first and proof it before I put it in.
You're here. how many tears have I seen in my years as a faculty member and as an administrator over why did I do that, right? Is going right into the learning management system. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And also I've never Saybrook, the teachers, all of them have been invested in my success.
That's great.
And as Maraf said, I communicated with them and they worked with me. And it's been 100% of the teachers, and that's just not something that you often see in a brick and mortar school. Some of the teachers are invested in the students that are in their program or the students that they personally are advising. But here, every single teacher was 100% invested in my success.
Wow. Terrific. Thank you for that. And I think our faculty will appreciate hearing that as well. I know they work hard on behalf of our students every day. So thank you for that. Richard, how about yourself?
Which angle are we tackling right now?
Yeah, really just your now, so you were in the, what is it? Did they call it the aughts? Is that right? So the early aughts, kind of as online learning was really making its way. So you might have had a radically different experience than most of the individuals on the phone or on the line right now.
Yeah. I mean, the technology was not very well developed compared to what some schools have, or maybe even Saybrook has right now. And I think the professors were kind of making the jump as well. So in a way that worked well for me because I could appreciate, the intelligence by, I didn't need them to be present online. Maybe nowadays I would need much more of like a weekly chat or discussions. So the experience, I found the experience of the RC getting face to face with a professor, which I rarely got that, you know, in a collegiate experience, like maybe office hours, you got to know someone well, but to have that kind of intensive where people were available to you, and you could really have an in-depth conversation and continue it, and that they would be available and that, I mean, for me, that it overlaps so strongly with the areas of my interest in spirituality and consciousness. There were people leading meditations at the RCs, people discussing imagery and healing. And so it was just this like flood. I used to come back so excited. I mean, I my family will tell you I'm working on my detail organization, and keeping things structure. Thank God to Google Calendar and things like that. But I was always, you know, kind of, I would look at the papers for the semester and I would, when I opened up the books, I would be targeting, thinking about, you know, what those papers were going to be about. And so I was always trying to both read for the excitement of the knowledge, but also be planning what kind of content would be going in. And I looked forward to it. You know, I didn't have other really distractions in the evening at the time. So I looked forward to making that time, you know, whatever it was, an hour or two, you know, a few times a week just to sit down and create this writing, because it was like the permission to discuss topics that were not happening in my environment, in my life. So tremendous enthusiasm. And I discovered at the time I was not very skilled at meditating. I got invited every morning to a meditation and the person who led it was an hour late. So I was like always thinking about my old judgmental mind, and like at 9 o'clock in New York, you're supposed to be at work. And here I was like sitting somewhere waiting to do something that had no material value from the way I was. And so I would just bring my work with me and I would read. So I figured a way to structure, you know, to create the structure for myself. And so, it was amazing discovery about learning about myself, and the relationship to the work.
Very nice. Very nice. I appreciate that. And you know, your perspective really coming in as a,
The old school,
right? I mean, it kind of parallels with a lot of the stories that we hear. I was just actually recording an episode before we had ours today with a grad from 2005, and she is a police officer, a former police officer. And so she was, you know, we were reminiscing a little bit, or she was, about her experiences, and very similar. But to your point, there's a lot of structure that you had to self-impose to move through that earlier process, those days. And yet it's similar to what we have now, right? Like Heather, as you mentioned, you had to create your own flow, and Meraf, you had to find your kind of essence in terms of that online portal and experience. And yet the faculty were always right there as your anchor point, to help guide and lead and support you in your journey, which I think is terrific. So thank you, sir. Appreciate that. And Tracy, how about yourself?
Hello. Well, for a student in the clinical psychology program, there's some nuances involved for us with online learning. And, you know, one of those is that we have, for licensure, required internship and practicum, you know, those hands-on learning experiences that are required. And going to a school, you know, if you don't like the school in your area, or you're attracted to a school that's away from your home, and if you go to brick and mortar, you're having to relocate yourself first, the school, and then also for internship, typically you're then having to relocate another one or two times if you need postdoc hours, depending on the state that you're licensing in. So really a clinical psychology program can really upheave, you know, really uproot you from your life and your home. So I believe that a real big strength in my education at Saybrook is the fact that I was able to stay in my home community as I studied clinical psychology to become a clinical psychologist. I didn't have to leave my adult children who were in the process of having their babies and, you know, enjoying. So I was able to stay and enjoy my grandchildren as I was going through the process, where brick and mortar, very possibly I would have had to have moved away from that and not had that real direct firsthand experience through the time. So keeping my life together and fulfilled and, you know, in my family was really important for me, which of course creates less stress and allowed me to fully engage in my work, because I wasn't stressing about those things. I wasn't feeling isolated and from my family and that. Let's see, what else did I want to, oh, and then as far as clinical psychology too, there is a movement in mental health toward, especially now with COVID. I think COVID is really a great teacher for us right now as far as clinical work goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this emergency with COVID, practitioners have had to move to telehealth work all across the country, and there are now services where you can be a therapist and all you do is text for clients. So for me, having the online process of my education is, you know, aligns with the way that practice is going. So I feel like because of my journey at Saybrook, that working in those ways is just kind of an extension of my education. So I feel it kind of levels out the practice and the education. And then at our RCs, it's amazing to come together with every cohort, not only of Saybrook as a whole, but every cohort in the clinical program itself. As a clinician, it is so important to have those professional relationships and that ability to talk things through and cases that you're working on and, you know, just really to have that interaction between clinicians. So I don't have just my cohort of people who started when I did, well, which isn't very many anymore anyway, but, you know, we have every clinical student. So I think that is so rich. And then cross-pollinating between the different programs has made me a deeper, richer, more open-minded clinician and person. Mm-hmm. Just in general, which needs to translate right into my clinical work to help people, you know, build a trusting relationship with me so that they can really touch those deep inner spaces that they need to work on. So I honestly can't imagine having gone to a different program and being the same clinician that I am because of my time at Saybrook.
Powerful.
Really, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think to your point there, you see that transformational experience in the RC or for the uninitiated, the residential conference experience, right? So where many of our Saybrooks, not all, but many come together for a span of anywhere from 3 to 7 days and engage in symposia and classes and, to your point, just engagement around clinical work and hours that you're putting in around you know, what you're experiencing, how to manage cases and caseloads, et cetera. So to that end, I think the, you know, Tracy, you hit on the point really well. And Janelle, I bet you have some thoughts too about the residential experience, that is part of the power of the online learning experience. For some who aren't aware, there's fully online, there's hybrid, which brings online and face-to-face together, so there's some options in between, and then there's face-to-face all together. Saybrook has kind of a hodgepodge of different programs with different options nowadays, to most of our programs hold to this hybrid model where we come together in that experience. I'm glad you said and mention the residential experience, because it is, it's one of the linchpins, if you will, of the Saybrook educational experience. I appreciate
definitely
that.
Yes.
Janelle, how about yourself?
Yes, I was first thinking about, because I had started, it had been a while since I'd started my master's degree. So that was 2010 for me as well, when I was finished. So when I started with Saybrook, there were some, of course, I had tried different programs, of course, before that. But then the actual experience at Saybrook and being in the online experience was definitely different from my experience as a master's level student at Argosy. For me, in the beginning, I was going through a time of what some would call situational depression. And I was transitioning from one job to another job. And I don't mind sharing that, because I'm definitely not dealing with that now. But that I was going through a lot of different changes when I started with Saybrook. And I was working full time. I was still singing. I was doing gigs. And so everything was so much. And I had to learn, and it has taken some time for me. I had to learn what was going to work for me. And so each term I was working full time doing gigs with different bands and going to school. And that was a lot. And this was the first time, this past semester was the first time that I was not working full time. And being in the online, well, I would say full time as in a regular full time job. Sure. Being in the online experience, having that support from great instructors like Dr. Ruth Richards and Dr. Terry Goffin Jones, just to name a few, having that support during that time is so essential. And I will say, for example, there's a course called Personal Mythology that some people may have taken or will take. During that time, one of the assignments, I had to talk about the different conflicts that was going on. And at the time, I was working full time at a university while doing that and doing gigs. And writing all of that information out and being able to see what I was dealing with and what I was making a priority. What were the conflicts? The conflicts of wanting to finish my education and get my education and work, you know, do my career, what was most important. So I was trying to figure all of that out. And in that class, I was able to figure out, okay, this was most important to me, my education, getting that. And then there was an opportunity came that allowed me to have more time to focus on my schoolwork, which was the opportunity to sing at B.B. King's. So my schedule changed, which allowed me to have more time to focus on that and focus on the things that mattered, because I had to give up that job at the university to do that. And this time in the COVID-19 situation, this semester allowed me to be able to really focus on my schoolwork, even though this was a very overwhelming time for all of us, because so much was changing. But it allowed me to be able to focus on my schoolwork, and I had that support from instructors. But if that was the case all the time, but I was able to say it this semester, I could really focus on it. But it was a challenge. The other semesters trying to work full time, and you know, everybody has a different story with that. There's some people who can definitely do it and get through it, but I'm so thankful that I have a schedule now, or will have continue to have a schedule. I'll be able to focus more on my schoolwork. But the online experience has been an experience of support, flexibility from the instructors that I totally appreciate, and a connection that I probably wouldn't have got anywhere else. And it's really helped me to see things that, you know, you may have to change. It's like trial and error. Sometimes you have to look at what's going to work best for you to get through your coursework and what's going to work best for your schedule. And you all mentioned the RC experience. For me, that is the time where I'm so glad to be able to see everybody again and see familiar faces. And I'm so thankful for the friendships that I've made through the RC And, you know, it's important to have people you can connect with and, you know, reach out to for support, you know. And you never really know who you can get fresh ideas from, too, with people that you meet at the RC and the different workshops and how much you can get out of that. So it's just, it's really been a great experience for me. Challenging, for sure, with trying to juggle my schedule, but definitely worth it.
Very good. Very good. What a great story. And, you know, you and I still have to talk more about your music background because that's my background too.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to learn more about what you're doing. And when I make it to Nashville, get me to some BB Kings, I think, right?
Yeah. It'd be great. Great.
So the one question that looms large is what makes Saybrook different or special or unique, and I'll go out on a limb here. You know, the thing that drew me to Saybrook was the fact that it had this humanistic orientation, and a lot of people ask the question, like, what is that? What does that mean? Aren't all places humanistic? And the answer to that is actually no, not necessarily. And be curious to hear from your perspectives, just maybe a few thoughts from each of you, and anyone can kick it off. Whoever feels the spirit move them. What does humanistic mean to you, and how does Saybrook embody that in its own way from your perspective, or how did it embody that for Richard, in your position?
Are you calling me first?
Sure, why not?
I'll take it. Humanistic to me means treating the whole person. It means seeing them for who they are in the world. Obviously, the approach of humanistic, sitting face-to-face, honoring everything about that person, not viewing them as just a function of their unconscious or subconscious drives, or seeing people as function of ailments, or as if there's something in dysfunction that they need to be working with a clinician, and that the entirety of their experience and everything that's been brought to them from how they see and view and live in the world, and every part of them needs to be brought present not only into our research as clinicians, but into the session. The greatest mm-hmm. The fact that Saybrook has Carl Rogers, who's one of the influential movement leaders of the movement, and his daughter was teaching at the school or had worked with the school, both in terms of content that's being delivered and in terms of faculty displaying those qualities in the interactions when I was face-to-face, to me embodied kind of, you know, humanism and the curiosity with spirituality, culture, every aspect of health. I think that integrative health, someone mentioned earlier, that all those practices were being studied and looked at, from native drum circles to ways in which people use music to heal in different cultures over time. So,
well stated from a humanistic clinical psychologist, I think.
Thank you.
Yes, and actually I would say absolutely yes. And thinking about my years of learning alongside Dr. Theopia Jackson and her deep lens of social justice and, humanity from this lens. Adding to that is really learning to consider a person's context, right? Not just who they are, but where they are, what's happening in their life, what has been, what has happened in their life in their context to that has an impact on their behaviors. And so that to me has been really huge in learning to show up as a humanistic clinician, because I am not labeling them, like Richard said, and, you know, really looking at everything within their life. And I think right now, especially, we're seeing that alive in our society right now. And I'm so grateful that I have learned to show up, not just in a clinical situation, but in the world as who I am, as a daughter, a mother, a grandmother, and my relationship to what's happening as far as the racial tension right now. So that to me is what it means to be a humanistic clinician and someone who cares deeply about my fellow people.
Thank you for that.
I'll go next. This is Janelle. I'll go back to when I was thinking about, you know, the paper that I did in personal mythology, and that really was helping me to see that what I valued and the things that meant something to me was basically showing who I am, and that who I am and what I value is okay as a human. And so I think that it's in the humanistic point of view, that's what's helping us as we look at that perspective as students and helping our clients and whomever we work with and whoever we interact with, helping them to see that who they are is enough. And looking at themselves as Richard was saying, as a whole person, and not always trying to define yourself based on what other people are trying to define you as, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
and so I think the humanistic point of view is empowering you to be yourself. When you think about Carl Rogers and the person-centered theory, or the fact that he is trying to get the client to focus on how they want to be better, you know, not how Rogers is trying to help you be better, how you want to be better. And so I think that's, like Tracy was saying, in this current climate, we are learning a lot, and learning how different we are and how we should be accepting of people, and how we should try to listen more. Mm-hmm. And if we listen more, then we can learn to really respect and love people in new ways.
Well said, and I think listening more is probably the primary thing that we could all do in this current moment. Yeah. It seems like everyone has been all consumed with talking a lot and maybe not sitting back and hearing one another through all of this and what's being experienced. Thank you for that, and I appreciate it. And, you know, interestingly, Dr. Jackson and I had the honor and privilege of speaking to each other last week or the week before last. It's all starting to blur together now in COVID-19 brain. But Janelle, you brought up the idea of that it's not what Carl Rogers wants or what the therapist wants, right? It's what do you want to get out of this experience? What is the individual hoping to achieve? And I thought Theopia or Dr. Jackson's point was well made. This isn't about a me and you, me versus you, or me telling you how to do it. It's we're in journey together. We are joining in hands and working through whatever issues that you want to work through. And I am simply your partner in that process. Although we all know that there's a lot more to it than being a partner, but certainly that is a key fundamental philosophy behind it. Really great. Tracy and Janelle, thank you for raising that. And Richard, the foundational aspects. Heather or Merof, any other thoughts from you on humanistic?
Yeah. You know, if you'd asked me when I first got my RD if nutrition was humanistic, I'd be like, sure, we help humans. But your conventional nutrition programs only scratch the surface. Mm-hmm. You know, eat this, eat your veggies, go for a walk, drink your water. But it's far more than that. And I think the integrative part of the SABRIC program really highlights that. You know, looking at those mind-body modalities that support your nutritional health. We know stress can impact your ability to maintain or lose or gain weight. How do you manage stress? You don't do it through eating. You do it through a mind-body modality. The other thing is looking at beyond just what they eat and when they eat, but also what is their environment like? Hormones impact how your body processes nutrients. Well, if you've got too many chemicals in your environment, you may have some difficulty with that. So it's really looking beyond just calories in, calories out, go for a walk.
Well said. Well said. Offline, I'll have to tell you some of my stories around that, just personally and family-wise. It's you hit the nail on the head, and I think it really is that holistic mindset and understanding the whole experience. Lori Taylor and I have had a number of conversations around this very topic and how she influences change. Yeah,
I think this experience with COVID is really going to highlight how nutrition can really help. Mm-hmm. With like depression and mental health as well.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Thank you for that, Heather. Madoff?
Yes. I mean, I think I agree with what everyone on this panel is pretty much saying, like the integrative portion. One thing I did want to add, I'm currently enrolled in the spirituality and health class right now. And I will say since entering SABRIC, I didn't really realize the importance of incorporating a client's spirituality into their treatment. I'll ask, but I'll never take that extra step. And I think partly because I never had my own meditation practice or mindfulness practice, which pretty much day one at SABRIC RC, that's what I learned. But it's been so beneficial over the years to my client. And in this class right now, I'm learning that this concept of simply listening, you don't have to believe what your client is saying or agree with them or whatever. It's about, A, it's their treatment. And if something so significant as spirituality can be included into their treatment, why not at least give them the option to include it, you know? And I think that is a huge component into this whole integrative mind-body medicine concept because yes, we're looking at the mind, the physical, the nutrition and all of that. And I think sometimes spirituality is kind of left out and we tend to forget. At least I did, I know for sure as a clinician. So that is something I do appreciate for SABRIC allowing me to learn and teach my own clients how important their spirituality can be for their own treatment. So. Yeah.
Beautifully stated. Thank you. And I think you're right. It's so often that we forget that aspect of patient care or client care, right? In the work that we do day in and day out. Well, it has been an hour and I am just so grateful for each of you. Any final parting thoughts from any of you? Feel free to add in anything that you want to be said or heard. Before we cut out, I want to make sure that we hear from each of you about your, you know, whether it's a business or a particular website or if there's anything else you want us to know about you, just to plug that. So any final closing thoughts from you before we get into that part?
I just wanted to add that, you know, one of my cohort, you know, the people that you go to school with at SABRIC are leaders in the world. I can say that, you know, being a decade removed, you know, Dan Booth Cohen, who was one of my, you know, and he would display family constellation method at the RCs. He goes into prisons. I've met people here in California that know him, that do this work, that go in and work with people who have committed violent crimes and then are uniting people who have been victimized with those who did the victimize to create a healing experience so that people can get the closure they need. And these kind of paradigms are revolutionary. This is not what you get in a cookie cutter brick and mortar school. And it has profound impact right now, you know, based on what you know, I'm seeing here, you know, in Los Angeles in terms of race dialogue and things of that nature, the ability to like Meraf was mentioning, spirituality, if we don't do a spiritual assessment, if we're not asking these questions, then people may get the message, I'm not supposed to talk about this here. I'm not allowed to bring God into the therapy discussion, or I'm not allowed to bring up racial privilege because I need to, you know, this has been, absorbed through culture and ingrained. So opening these dialogues up and creating this change. And I was just so thankful that Department of Mental Health in Los Angeles, just through the Saybrook, initiating me, now has spiritual assessments, now is starting to do that kind of work. So this school and the people on this panel are trendsetters and have a tremendous power in the community.
Amen to that. Thank you, Richard. Thank you.
For those who are at home and this is your first time, not being able to go out and see other people, for me, I've been lucky. I've been a full-time Saybrook student, no job. So I've been staying at home. The shelter in place made no change in my daily patterns, or very little change. But losing the feeling of having community can be hard. And just to remember, you're not alone. There is community here at Saybrook. And all you need to do is reach out, and there'll be dozens of people ready for you.
Hear, hear. There you go. Absolutely.
I'll add that I think that it's important to focus on setting boundaries for yourself. And some people can, of course, associate that with self-care. But I think in this time, if you're in classes, whatever is going on, think about what you need to do to keep your peace and protect your peace. And that also goes back to things that are important to you, like your values. I believe that's important to focus on that. And just remember that it's okay to tell someone no. And do that for yourself and whatever it is to help you to keep moving forward and being successful, because you can't really be successful without setting those type of boundaries and knowing who you are and what you need to do for yourself.
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
And then I would piggyback on Heather and what she was saying about reaching out. I myself, in the last few months, have experienced a lot of basic need insecurity, and it has helped me to develop a practice of reaching out to ask for help, which is, of course, very humbling from a very independent person. That has been a big learning process, and also learning to receive. And Saybrook is really a wonderful place to learn those things, because it really is such a close community. And, it's been really wonderful through this time to, especially through COVID, to witness Saybrook from every level, administration, faculty, staff, everyone, really stepping up and offering lifelines to those of us within our own community, as well as helping to empower those of us out in the world doing work to continue to hold up, our society as we have such greater need. So I just wanted to personally right now thank Dr. Long and everyone who was involved in creating the Greatest Needs Fund. In just really showing that compassion and walking the talk within our own halls. So thank you and everyone involved in getting that together. And I just want to let people in our community know that, it's really wonderful to have the ability, even just talking about what I was going through, and getting it out there and allowing my community to know that I had these great needs. I know they were sending out whatever spiritual offerings they have for me, and I knew that I was being loved and held. So even that alone was helpful. So I would encourage, if you are really struggling and you need some help, please reach out to someone, even me. I'm here for anybody in our community that I can help too. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Okay, we've reached our opportunity to share your, if you have a website or a business or something you want to refer students or colleagues or community members, you know, this goes out everywhere. So maybe we'll just go across the way, and Janelle, we'll start with you. If there's a special website or area of interest that you want to point people towards, and if you don't have anything, that's okay too. So no pressure. So Janelle?
Okay. Well, I will say that I do have a website, and it's JanelleMeans.com, but we are in the process of updating that, and it just, you know, gives information on different events that I have coming up. But I do want to say that the video that you saw, Dr. Long, with all the performers, and that was from a show that we do called, initially called Soul Vibes Collective, but it is now going, we've changed the name of it to Soul Vibes Global. And Global has, it's an acronym, and so but once we're creating the website for that, and we'll have a Instagram and Facebook page for that, we'll reveal all of that in time. But it's because our vision for it is growing, and we want it to be able to reach everyone. Of course, we're based out of Nashville, but we want this to be something that makes an impact on people worldwide eventually. So, but it has a lot of different elements. As far as the word global, it's not just about world or global. It's about including diverse backgrounds, people of different ethnicities, and being able to bring about their creative flow, their creative talent with music and the arts. So, yeah, wonderful. So I'm excited about that.
We'll make sure to include, by the way, yours and all of our panelists or guests here today, information in our show notes. And it's www.JanelleMeans,
.com. Mm-hmm. JANNELLE, then it means is MEANS.com. And, but we are, it's up, but it's just, we're updating it too, because there's some things to be updated it, but, and on it, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Super. All right. Thank you, Janelle.
Thank you.
All righty. Tracy?
Yes. Yeah, so as I mentioned at the beginning, I'm really at the very beginning of working with Saybrook alumna, Dr. Monica Mancia at her Relational Path Institute. So right now, the best way to connect with me is to go to her website. It's relationalpath.com. And just click the contact us, and you can just put in there, hey, you know, I'd like to connect with Tracy Sisk, and she can get us connected that way. I am in the process of getting a coaching practice together now to help people with their relationships and helping them to develop relational mindfulness. And that's what I'm up to. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. Richard?
Well, COVID has launched me into much more telehealth. Hopefully it's launched me forward. I can reach athletes, professionals all in the world, all over the world. Anyone who's looking to channel their inner hero to become a better performer, and whether that be a mother of three sitting out in their doctorate at Saybrook, or be a MMA fighter looking to get back in the ring after overcoming their own COVID symptoms. That's my mission now, to help channel humanism into sports and performance. The Richard Listens podcast is my passion, telling the stories of people and their journeys, which are not always just about, you know, winding up in the champion's ring, sometimes about leaving sports and discovering their passion towards activism. And doing so in other fields such as music or, you know, entertainment or medicine, you know, the real heroes in all of this, corona, other than teachers who are leading Zoom classes, are, you know, doctors and healthcare professionals. So, Richard Listens is Facebook and Instagram, my patreon.com/Richard Listens page for advanced content. And if you'd like to, support the show and get some behind the scenes looks. My practice, richardlistens.com. I'm sure you're getting the theme. So we look forward to delivering more variations of podcasts such as this, panels, discussions on topics, things for retired athletes, you know, kind of information we always wish we had when. So if there's a aspect of humanistic psychology that you'd like covered, or something that can help deliver a discussion or collaboration, I'm here to be a resource.
Fantastic. Thank you. RichardListens.com.
That's right.
Got it. All right. Heather Pate.
I actually am not have any extra projects going on. My whole life is Saybrook, but I am a peer mentor. So I'm happy to, if anyone wants to reach out, you can find me at hpate@saybrook.edu.
Great. Thank you, Heather. All right. And Meraf, last but not least.
So I actually was developing my website and then COVID hit and then it just stopped. So I haven't completely launched my website, but it will be ableminds.co, able, my last name. So kind of a little play on my last name. But in the meantime, I'm accessible on my email, which is medoff.able@gmail.com. God, I don't even know my email address. So medoff.able@gmail.com.
And Meraf, would you mind spelling that out for our listeners?
Oh, yeah. So it's MERRAF, as in flower, .able, A-B-E-L, @gmail.com.
Perfect. All right. Well, you all have been a wonderful, able collective of incredible individuals. I'm so truly inspired. Every time I meet with students and alumni, I just, my heart grows 10 times the size in a good way, and just really pleased to have met all of you here, to have seen some of you again for alternative or additional time. So thanks again so much for your time today and all your insights and wonderful thoughts for our community. And good luck to each of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you all in person someday soon.
Hopefully soon. Yes. Sooner rather than later. Absolutely. All right. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you.